Today we're going to talk about how to get in with a race team. Race drivers, this is Enzo with the Race Driver Coacher. Welcome to another episode, and we're going to be focusing on a career aspect here. Now, for a long time, I haven't done this for ages, is set up a video or an episode like this based off one question from a subscriber, and it's actually a question that I've been asked a lot, and it's probably a question that you want to know as well if you're watching this video. And it was from Phil. Here was his question. Hi Enzo, can you give me some advice on how to get in with a race team? Now, this is a question that could have a lot of different answers because it depends on how far in your career you are. If you're a newbie completely, or if you're a seasoned professional with championships under your belt already, it's different, isn't it? If you're trying to get in with a team to start, or a team that you want to get paid by. So I think I'm going to split this video. I'll split this video up into two different sections. First of all, amateur tips, which will cover the kind of things that drivers who are at the start of their career or in the first, you know, 4 or 5 years of their career, the kind of answers they need in order to get into a team that they want to be in. And then for the second part of the video, we'll look at the pro tips, which is the kind of advice that drivers need to know if they're going for teams where they've got to be paid. So it's a bit higher level. So first of all, let's get into the amateur tips, which, you know, everyone's an amateur right until they're paid. So even when you're in F2 and F3, that sort of level, you call yourself a race driver, but still most drivers there are paying the race team to run them. Or somebody's paying the race team to run them. They're not being paid as such. There's very few drivers that are. And if they are, then they probably brought so much sponsorship to the team that if the to pay for F2 costs 2 million, right? 2 million euros. If they brought a sponsor on board that's 2.5 million and they're pocketing the 500,000 or whatever, it's just an example, then they're earning money, but that's so damn rare that that's happening. So most drivers are amateur from F2 down. You know, they haven't got a professional contract, they're not getting paid by the race team, then I'm afraid you're amateur, even though you don't feel like you are, and you've been paying so much in and you've been racing for decades. That's just the way the sport is, I'm afraid. And some people are even paying at the very, very top, so they're still not really professional. It's what they do, and they're in F1 and they're in IndyCar, but they're paying to be there, so they're still not pro. So I'm talking to all these drivers, basically drivers that are paying to play. Now, first you need to understand how teams are set up. When you look at any team that's running an F2, F3, Indy Lights, them kind of level teams, they need the cash from the drivers in order to run the team, to compete. So if it costs them, let's just say it costs a cool million, right, to run two cars competitively in the certain championship that they're in, then they need two drivers bringing just over 500,000 each. So that the money they get runs the team, pays the mechanics, pays the engineers, keeps the lights on at the workshop. The team boss gets to make a little bit of money out of it. But really, the big income, or most of the income, comes from the drivers. And maybe they've got a few sponsors themselves, the teams, but predominantly they need drivers to bring the cash to run the car and run the team. And that's pretty much how it's set up. So when you're coming into racing and you pay for a team to run your car, that's basically the deal. That's what it is. You either do that through your own cash, through somebody else paying, through sponsors, or it doesn't really matter. The team just say to you, if you're an amateur, this is how much it costs. And what do you think? Do you want to join us or not? So actually, if you're an amateur, it's not that difficult to go to a team that you want to go with if you've got the cash. It is really pay to play. So if you're really at the beginning of your career, right, or at racing, you first of all, you get your race license from a race school. Then you look at the championships that that license allows you to race in. You see which teams are in it. You approach them, you ask how much, and you pay the bill, and you race. It really is that simple. So when you think you're coming into racing and like, how do I get the attention of a race team so they select me? I'm afraid without cash, they're not going to select you when you're a newbie. They just won't. Why should they? They won't pay to run you, not knowing how good you are. It's too risky. Their business model isn't set up that way. They haven't got the cash, most of them. A lot of these teams that are in the lower formula, They need your cash in order to run the car, like I say. So you go in there, asking for a drive, trying to stand out and thinking, oh, will they pick me? It doesn't work like that. So I really, first of all, if you're thinking that way, that's not how motorsport's set up. You are a customer that's looking for somebody to run your car for you. That somebody is a race team. And you go and pick them and pay them. That's really how it is. Now, when you get to like, I would say F3, F2, then it gets a bit different because they want your money. All of the teams do, of course. But the top teams are that inundated with so many drivers wanting to race for them, then they start to pick. So if they've got like 10, 15 drivers all wanting their three seats, you know, they've got three seats in F3 and they're saying, right, I think, you know, all of them have got money. Then the team can start to pick. This one's fast. This one's good. I like the attitude of this one. I get on with this one or whatever it is that gets them in the door. But, or they race for us in our junior because we also, as a team, run F4 and we've been with them a year and we want to help them basically go up the ladder. And we want to show other people, the paddock, that if they go with our F4 team, we'll promote them to our F3 team. So they're thinking on the business model, right? Business side of things. So the top four or five teams are like that. Then as you go down to the teams that haven't got the results, these people have got less, these teams have got less people, drivers, knocking on their door, and they can't pick as much. So if somebody comes with a lot of money, but they've got pretty good results, you're probably in. And that's how it kind of works as you're going up to the higher levels of the junior categories. But when you're at the low, low levels, teams will often pick whoever's got the money until their seats are full. So that's how it works, all right? That's just kind of just an overview of you're the one in control. If you're at the beginning of your career, you're the one that's in control. You just take the checkbook and just choose whichever team. And that's really point number one is do your research. So if you picked your championship, the kind of championship you want to be in, the one, two, three championships, then I would look and see which teams, if you're looking for a good one, of course, to get the better results because they've got good car and they've got good understanding, good database of data so you can improve your driving, historical data, then I would look at the top three or four teams in these categories that you want to race in and just see which ones they are and start a spreadsheet. So you say, in this championship, these are the three or four teams that I think I want to race for. And you start to do your research that way. What's the team boss's name? What's their contact details? You're getting all this on an Excel sheet, right? So you're becoming a bit like a manager. You're becoming like, this is my black book of the kind of teams I want to race for. Telephone number, contact name, where they're based, and any other information. And you put them all on that Excel list. And you become an expert of these teams. You get to know them. You see their results. You know, this one won the championship 3 years ago. This one did look like they only had one driver last year, but they were still up the front. Just a few details, so you become the expert. That's the first thing. Do your research and then pick which teams you actually want to approach. Then contact them. The next thing is, I've got the number. I can see that I like this kind of team. I'm going to call them up. Don't email, because they get so many emails, they probably won't answer. I mean, by all means, send emails to see if they do. Give it a week. If they're not racing, they'll get back to you maybe 30% of the time. Because teams are that busy. This is why they don't get back to you. They're that busy. They get so many different emails from a lot of time wasters. So they don't know if you're one of them time wasters or they're just so busy they haven't checked their emails. So I find the best way is to call them up. Ask for the team owner, if that's the kind of person that actually is hands-on, not just an investor, or the team manager. And you basically say, I would love to race for you next year. I've watched your results. It looks good. You know, I've watched your championship all last year, your campaign. I want to race for you this year. Have you got any seats available? And if so, can you send me some details? That's it. And they might ask about you. What have you raced? If you haven't raced at all, tell them. There's no point lying. If you've raced before, say, yeah, I did whatever, F4, and I've got three top tens, but I'm looking to get better next year. And they'll probably know you anyway if you raced against them or in the category beneath them. So you just got a conversation that way. I'm a big believer in calling people up. It gets the job done. Instead of just sending an email, hoping and waiting for someone to contact you back, which they hardly ever do because it gets missed, calling them and calling them over and over and over again until you get them, it's much faster. And it's amazing how the conversation flows. And it's amazing how many drivers don't do this. So I would do it. I would make it a priority. First of all, do the research, get to know which teams you're going to select, phone them up, talk to the top person, ask them to just send you some details. And if you're happy, get an official contract to look over. So if you look at the details, maybe you go and visit the team, you know, go and see them and you look at their workshop and you have a chat with them. Then you get a formal offer from them, like a contract. And they send this to you via email, and it's basically a legal document that says, we're going to provide you this service for this much money with all the clauses of all the things that might happen, the payment structure, you know, you're going to pay up. If it's like $100,000 to do this championship, you're going to, on the sign-in date, when you actually sign the contract, you pay them $20,000. Then you pay them monthly, whatever that is. However the structure is, you can negotiate on that, on how it's paid. Maybe you want to not front-load it so much, or you want to pay more up front. The big thing is to not pay for your budget all up front. Please avoid that. Because if you fall out with the team, if the team go bankrupt halfway through the year, or if something else happens where basically you're not happy with the service, so you don't want to pay for it anymore, but you've paid all up front, it can be a shark pit out there. It can be, you can have a situation where the team will say, well, you paid us, so, and we've offered the service. From our point of view, we're giving you a good service, so you're not having your money back. Then you get in a legal dispute. So I would make sure that it's stepped, it's staged, it's payments of equal amount. So if it's a 8-month championship, then see if you can split it to 8 or 6 or 5 different installments, and then everybody's happy. So that's the contract, right? So you get that, get a lawyer to look at it, get your manager or someone to look at it, someone who knows what they're looking at, to make sure you're not being ripped off. And when you're happy, you sign it, and obviously that's it, you signed up. Or you go back saying, can we change this? Can I have more advertising space on the car? I'm not quite sure about this clause. And you bounce it to and fro until everybody's happy. But what happens if you haven't got the budget? Now the thing is, they send you this contract, all these details, right? Saying, we will provide you with an F4 car, it's going to cost you this much, we're going to do this many test days. Each test day you're going to have so many, you know, 2 sets of new tires. And you've got it all listed out as brief detail, you know, the first details they send you. And if you look at it, you think, you know what, we can't quite afford that. Then I would be honest with them, because this is where you may be able to get a deal. Now, you can get a deal if, for example, you won the championship the season before in the category below, or you won the championship, or you won loads of races in that series already. So you've got a really good reputation. So maybe they think, you know what, this driver's going to put us as a team at the front of the grid, because we haven't been at the front of the grid for a while, but their driving skill will get us up the front. So we could give them a reduction. We could give them a reduction in the budget, because they're going to put us up the front and then attract more drivers to us for the following year. And we really need that right now, because we've had 3 seasons now of finishing 10th in the championship, but we know our car is good. We need a good driver. Then you can barter with them. You can get a subsidized driver or a discount for your budget. Sometimes it's even free if you're really good. Say if you're stepping down a category because you've got nothing else to do. You've got no money to do anything else. You see it in their F3. You see drivers come back for like the 3rd year sometimes, and the team's giving them a mega deal because they need that driver to put their car at the front. So there are things you can do. Or you can try and get a sponsor for the team themselves. If you find it easier than getting a sponsor just for little old you, you think, right, how about a team sponsorship? Or is there something that my dad's company could provide for the race team in order to knock their bills down or to give them some kind of kickback? So there's a business deal there, B2B. And pretty much as a result, I get a reduced cost of my budget. So if you haven't got the budget, you've got to think of all the different ways that you can actually get that money together, using the team as a sponsor, to sponsor the team sort of thing. Or is there something I can provide them that's as good as money, that will get them money in the long run? This is where you've got to be more of an entrepreneur, a race entrepreneur, to think about this. So you know it's very simple now, right? I want to go racing. I see a certain championship that I want to go in. I look for the top teams or a team that looks trustworthy and good. And I talk to people, ask them, you know, what's their reputation like? Talk to their ex-drivers, get a feeling of what they're like, contact them, get details, get a formal quote, or should I say a formal contract, yes or no. And that's pretty much all there is to it. And if you haven't got the cash, think about ways that you could get the cash or things that are as good as cash. Maybe a teammate that's going to pay way more than they need to, and they know it, but you're there as their teammate and you're helping them, you're coaching them, and you get a drive, a subsidized drive. All these things can happen. So amateurs, it's quite simple. See who you want to race for, contact them, get the price, yes or no. Now we move to pro tips. These are the kind of tips that we talk about if you're a professional driver or you want to be a professional driver and you've got results already. So there's a few points. There's five main points that I've listed here. Here's the first one. What are your past results? If you're going to sell yourself to a race team, you got to have some value, right? And you know what I've told you in the past. It's bills and dreams. You either got to help a race team pay their bills, which is the amateur sort of way of doing it, if we're just going to pay the bill to run the car, or you answer their dreams. You help them get close to their dreams. And that's really on the professional side, because you're going to a professional team wanting to get paid or maybe a free drive. That's the idea. But you've got to offer them something. You've got to have speed. You've got to have results in the past to say, look, this is the caliber of driver I am. These are my results. I warrant a position, a seat on your team. If you haven't got the results, it's going to be difficult to be picked up by a pro team. It's just the way it is. What would you do, right? Say if you've got a selection, you've pretty much got the golden finger where you've, the seat's paid for because you've got a title sponsor, so you don't need the driver to bring any money. What are you going to do as a race team owner? You're going to look across all of the paddock, see which drivers are available, not under contract already, and which ones are the fastest. Which ones have the kind of caliber that you need. Maybe you need an experienced one who's got a really big CV and you know they're going to help you set the car up well and all that. Either way, you're not going to pick a driver that's not known and that hasn't got the results. The second thing they look for is your attitude. They want to see if they've got a super fast driver here in front of them, asking for a drive, coming to the workshop to visit them and seeing if they can actually have a place on their team, then they're going to want to know the attitude as well. Remember, they're picking someone who's going to fit in, someone who's got a good work ethic, someone who is a team player, and I think someone who won't upset the sponsors that we've got. So they've got to have a good mouth on them, really, and be in control. So that's big as well. So if you're not being picked, you know, I've got results and I'm still not getting a shot, take a little look at yourself. There might be something there that people don't like about you, the way you come across. Stick up that mirror and have a look at yourself and just ask, is there something I'm doing that's putting people off? And that leads me into the third thing, your reputation in the paddock. Way before a team will approach you, they'll ask people about you. They'll call your old teams. They'll call people that have driven against you in the car, you know, teammates and things. What was he like? What was she like? What were they like? And they get this first before they'll pick up the phone. So you've got to make sure that your reputation in the whole paddock is pretty good. And you're not upsetting people. You're not going into teams, using them, not paying your bills and falling out with them and all this. And just getting a reputation that way. Because I tell you what, the paddocks are so damn small. Everybody's linked to everybody. It's really weird how it happens, but if you've got someone who's got a bit of a bad attitude and doesn't get on with people, everybody knows it. If you've got somebody who seems like he or she is an absolute warrior, work ethic's great, they're very devoted, dedicated, charming people, that also, it permeates through the paddock like nothing else. So really understand that your reputation, your brand is just like a company. So you've got to get the results. Your product's got to be good, like a company or your service, but also your brand has got to be on point. And that's what works teams, professional teams look for. And if yours is not really there, you've got to be honest. Why would they pick you? Fourth thing to ask yourself is, am I promotable? Am I actually promotable? Do I speak to people well? Do I come across well? Would somebody, and it's probably not even a question that you can ask yourself or answer yourself. You've got to get somebody who's honest. Can I actually be put into a team and fit well and be a part of the team and the sponsor, you know, my face will fit with the sponsors kind of thing? I'm afraid it is an image sport. And I don't mean you've got to be good looking. I just mean you've got to be coming across in a professional way. Does that person suit this badge? And if you see like Ford versus Ferrari, that film, Ford wouldn't put the main character in the car, right? Christian Bale. They wouldn't put him in the car because of his mouth, because he was a bit unpredictable, and that's not the Ford way, was pretty much what they said. So they wouldn't put him in the car for ages. They had to bend over backwards to get him into that car, if you remember, if you've seen that amazing film. Matt Damon's in it as well. I really recommend you watch it, by the way. But it just, when I watched it, it just hit home again. Wow, that brand didn't want that driver in, and they kind of just boycotted him. No, I'm not interested. He can test the car, brilliant, but not race it, because his face doesn't fit. And that means his whole demeanor, not his face, but him as a character. You need someone to sit you down, look you in the face, and tell you if this is a problem in your area as well, with what you're doing. Again, if you're banging on doors, knocking them down, which I hope you are with all the works teams, but they're not listening, it'll either be your results, or it'll be the brand, you, your reputation, does your face fit kind of thing. You've got to know why and really be honest and not take it personal. It's just like, okay, it looks like I've got to change my tact, my angle, the way I am a little bit. It's normal. We all have to do this. If you're in business, you always have to have a look at the brand itself. How are we doing? Are we still delivering what we need to our customers? Are we fresh enough? Are we up with the times? Are we giving people what they need now? You as a driver always need to ask and answer the same questions. And the last thing I want to bring up is your political situation. It sounds strange, but this might be relevant to you. It might be relevant to someone who's watching this, is your gender, your ethnicity, your political position, your connections. These are the kind of things that might even open up opportunities right now. There might be a team looking for a certain person or a championship, like the W Series, females only, right? If I was a female, I didn't have much money, I would have gone for that. Because you get $500,000 if you win it. And there's a new academy, right? Formula Academy, similar thing. You get $500,000 if you won it. And they were desperate to turn a female race driver into an F1 driver, right? Take them all the way. So they had lots of motivation. Why wouldn't you join that? Why don't we just play the system? So now and then there's these kind of things. Teams are looking for certain, you know, people that have got connections in some way. Are you politically placed in some way that will get you in the seat, give you an advantage, give you something that a lot of drivers haven't got? Just think about that one. There's a minute chance that this is applicable to you, but I've seen it happen. I see it happen every year. Even gamers, right? A gamer who's really good, top of the world kind of gamer, and I'm talking about online racing, they're getting opportunities in real racing that a normal driver wouldn't. That's politically placed, if you like. They're at the top of the game on the e-world or online world, and somebody out there, race team, wants gamers, online racers, to make the jump to real racing. If that's something, if that's an angle, then go for that. Always think about this. Can I get in politically for who I am, what I am, if you want to call it that, the position I'm in, the people I know, can they get me through the door? So that's more pro tips. It's things you don't have to worry about if you're in the first few years of racing, but pros, if you're out there, you're being ignored, think about these five things I just said. Now I don't know who's watching this now, pros or amateurs, but I hope something in this video rings true, reminds you of something, and gives you a task this following week that you've got to do. Even if it's call up teams, even if it's make that database of teams that you want to select or you want to target, fine, do it, but be very proactive. Don't feel that race teams won't want you. Always contact them anyway, just to say hello and just understand the market as such. Keep banging on them doors, understand what's needed, look at yourself in the mirror, and adjust things so you can actually make yourself sellable to these teams. That's for pros more than amateurs. If you're amateurs, just get the money in. Get yourself in a car and a team that's up the front. Do what you can to get in that seat. Bend over backwards. Do whatever you can. Beg, borrow, steal. You just got to get yourself in that car if you're an amateur. Right, that's enough from me. I hope it helps, and I'll see you next week.